This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Blitz is defined as a sudden, savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic, primal confrontation. Man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts, lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are sock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe. Let's go ahead and get right into it on this week's presentation. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, thank you so much for enjoying another episode of the Longhorn Blitz podcast. Over a decade and still going strong, and that is thanks to you, the listeners. So thanks, everybody, for checking out the show. You can get the podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search Horns 24/7. Horns247, no dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button. Get every episode of The Blitz whenever it drops. And if you'd be so kind, please leave us a five-star review. That's how we keep these things going. Our management knows if we're doing an okay job. So any feedback you give is appreciated. Let me bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire, our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz, and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you?
Not too shabby. And the third member of our team, he wears a number of hats. He is a Renaissance man, but for the purposes of this podcast, he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth-round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, in the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes back in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program. Number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
I appreciate the intro as always, brother.
Guys, I want to start this week. Rod, probably you're probably best to start this with. I was thinking about the NFL draft. We already covered the draft, but I'm thinking about it in terms of premium positions. Mm-hmm. You talk to people in the league. You follow the league. You're well-versed in what's going on in the NFL. Would you still say not in any order, but that the five premium positions now in football are quarterback, offensive tackle, pass rusher, cornerback, wide receiver? Would you say those are five premium positions? Or would you say wide receiver is a premium position at this point?
Yes, it is now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there are five premium positions.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps growing kind of with the evolution of the game, but yeah, now wide receiver and cornerback are added to that list.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the pay grade too, like top end wide receivers, they get paid about as good as anybody.
Yeah.
And with as much RPO as there is, with as much, I mean, you're running stuff
And to me, with the NFL's version of the RPO, when you talk about strengths, I mean, the hash marks aren't near what they are in the college game. Does it really matter if you're talking left tackle or right tackle anymore?
I mean, I think you just want your tackles, period, to be strong.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing a lot of teams that they do want more versatility on O-line, so they want guys that, you know, can play multiple positions, or can be cross-trained. Cowboys started out that with their Tyler Smith. They want a guy that they can move around, because it's now the O-line's kind of become what the secondary used to be, where, all right, I got a corner who's a great corner, but your age out of corner is just natural because, you know what I mean, father time comes for us all. But you still, if your football acumen and your football IQ continues to increase, yet your physical skills decrease, you can still end up moving to safety. And we've seen that, obviously, that progression for DBs time after time. It's been really successful. Yeah. I think you're starting to see a little bit on the O-line, too. I think you're starting to look at some of the O-linemen. There are some O-linemen now that changed, going from when they're at their peak. It's like, all right, you're a left tackle now. You're at your peak. And then you'll see them move around as either they acquire more talent or as they begin to kind of revamp the O-line, which every team has to do every, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or so.
Right.
So I think, yeah, I think you're starting to see that. But either way, I'm with you. Both tackles probably should be in there. And that's why they say pass rush. You're not looking for, you know, a left end or right. He's looking for a great pass rusher, period.
Yeah.
Let's look at Micah Parsons. He's playing, he'll play DN now, but just a pass rusher.
I think D-line probably covers it, especially if you've got, you know, a guy like Aaron Donald who can, and maybe Aaron Donald's a bad example, but I'm thinking about like an interior pass rusher that can play multiple shades, no matter whether you want
Chris
to go.
Chris Jones.
With, yeah, okay, there you go.
Chris Jones like that.
I mean, if you want to have him play a three technique in like a NASCAR package, he can. You
Straight
want to kick him out
daddy.
To a seven, yeah, he can do that. So I started thinking about this in terms of
Alfred Collins should be. Sorry.
Yes. No, it's
not a shot at Alfred Collins, but that's what we're hoping he's that this year. He's got the body for it.
Yeah, it's he got the tools for it. Just oh man, you just hope it comes to fruition. I think everybody listening to this right now, Rod, probably when you said Chris Jones, you said it. I think they were thinking the same thing. Like, that's what Alfred Collins turns out to be, or something close to it. But I was thinking about this in terms of when Texas has been really good, and you know, we can talk about first round picks, but I decided just to look at top 100 picks, because I think if you're in the top 100 in the draft, you're probably going in the first three rounds, most likely, unless there's a weird thing with comp picks or whatever. But I really started looking at it for the 2001 draft. So that's coming off the 2000 season. Rod, your sophomore year, Texas was 9-3, 9-2 in the regular season, lost the Holiday Bowl to Oregon. And you start looking at the top 100 picks and look at the positions Texas was putting out into the draft. Leonard Davis, offensive tackle. You wouldn't call Casey Hampton a pass rusher, but there wasn't probably you go back and look at that 01 draft, maybe not a better pick that fit more of what a team does than Casey Hampton going to the Steelers. Sean Rogers was a Pro Bowler. Rod, you played with him in Detroit. The 2002 draft, Mike Williams, fourth overall as an offensive tackle. Quentin Jammer, fifth overall as a corner. Go to 2003, Corey Redding, pass rusher. Chris Sims, quarterback. 2004, Roy Williams, wide receiver. Marcus Tubbs, again, hitting that defensive line. 2005 is a little bit different because Cedric Benson at running back, Derek Johnson at off-ball linebacker. You wouldn't consider those premium positions, but those are premium players.
Yes, and Derek Johnson was before his time, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go to 2006, Vince Young, quarterback. Michael Huff, could be corner, could be safety, didn't really matter. Cedric Griffin, hybrid corner. The only one that really didn't fit, David Thomas at tight end, but the Patriots took him. Belichick was already trying to do the thing he eventually ended up doing with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, where you could play more 12 personnel.
Yep.
2007, Michael Griffin. I think the Titans actually drafted him as a corner. Aaron Ross, corner. Justin Blaylock, offensive tackle. Tim Crowder, pass rusher. Brian Robinson went 102 overall, pass rusher. Go to 2008, Lima Swede. Wide receiver, premium position. Jamal Charles, not a premium position, but a premium player. Whereas I had Jermichael Finley, tight end, but we know not a typical inline guy. A guy that, you know, Green Bay, they moved him around, did a lot of different things with him. Go to 2009, Brian Arakpo, pass rusher. Roy Miller, defensive line. Henry Melton goes 105, pass rusher. And a guy in more of that Chris Jones mold, Rod, where you can do different things with him. Henry Melton ended up being a Pro Bowl player.
Yep.
2010, Earl Thomas, again, fit perfectly with that Legion of Boom defense. Sergio Kendall, pass rusher. Lamar Thomas, versatile lineman. Jordan Shipley, wide receiver. Colt McCoy, quarterback. that's probably the end of, and I'll say the following year, you had Aaron Williams and Curtis Brown going to the top 100. Sam Acho went 103. That's still a corner pass rusher. So probably right around the, that's probably where it cuts off of when Texas really stopped producing premium players on a regular basis. Let me rephrase that. Players at premium positions on a regular basis. There's a lot of too many P's in here. You got that, Rod? You got that? What is it? I don't even want to say it.
Power personnel and pivot to past principles.
Yeah. It's a lot of alliteration to just my brain can't process it.
Stick in there sometimes.
But you know, you start looking at it, and like, let's take quarterback. Okay, Colt McCoy was drafted in the top 100. Still waiting on a quarterback to go in the first 100 picks. Sam was picked 218. Wide receiver, you had Devin Duvernay was 92 when he got drafted in 2020. You didn't have a wide receiver go in the top 100. The next one you had was, Marquise Goodwin in 2013.
Speed, baby.
It's a 7-year gap between somebody spent a premium pick on a premium position player, wide receiver from Texas.
Well, I totally agree with that. But I think it more showcases the offensive identity crisis at Texas during that time. What years were those?
Let's see. Marquise Goodwin was 2013, and you didn't have another one until Duvernay in the 2020 draft.
There you go.
So I mean, that's 2012 that season of 2019.
You're in the meat of your offensive identity crisis as a program, right? So getting back to your premium positions in the NFL. So premium position in the NFL, we know what they are, quarterback, tackle, defensive pass rusher, whatever it may be, cornerback, wide receiver. It all revolves around the passing game. Mm-hmm. And Texas had their offensive identity crisis, which was sparked by the Shakespearean irony of the marquee university in the state of Texas not being able to find a quarterback in what became the quarterback mecca of the United States of America. Like, you couldn't write it. It's like, that's crazy. You can't even make that stuff up. So I just think it reflects that. So I was right. That affected Texas' ability to develop a passing game, to develop a passing identity. And when we talked about it, at times, you know, Texas trying to, whatever, reinvent themselves offensively, whether it be with a new offensive coordinator, whether it be with a coach that decided, like Mac Brown, hey, man, we're going from this style to this style. Texas probably had 6-7 different attempts at an offensive identity within maybe a 10-year period, and they just kept missing and whiffing. And now, actually, for the first time in a long time, and I've talked about this on the show, and I've talked about it here on Longhorn Blitz, you know, Longhorn fans have famously hated Texas offenses for decades. I mean, you got to go back to Darryl K. Royal was the last time Longhorns actually started, like, praising and Emory Ballard, last time they praised an offensive identity. Even when Greg Davis was here, most Longhorn fans complained and criticized Greg Davis way more than they complimented his offenses. We've probably been more complimentary of Greg Davis' offense than anybody, and any other podcast, and probably kind of shown a different light on Greg Davis than most Longhorn fans. So they hate the offense. They like Sark's offense, though. So Sark's offense, it appeals. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's easy to recruit to Sark's offense because it is an explosive offense and it's known for, you know, big chunk plays. It's an offense that wants to be exciting, almost to a fault, right?
Yeah.
Right? Chasing the deep ball, those kind of things. But either way, I do think the offensive identity crisis had a direct effect on Texas' ability to produce premium positions, because when you're switching identities, you can't even produce a premium position because, number one, you know, obviously you don't have the consistency, all right, to be able to sustain a certain system over time and then recruit players successfully to that system. But also, you didn't keep up with football theory where the game was going.
Yeah.
All right, Mac Brown's initial, you know, mistake, Dane coaching mistake, miscalculation was, all right, I want to be like Bama. I want to be like Nick Saban. Nick Saban just beat me with this power running game. That's where we're going, baby. We're going power running game. And it's like, no, Michael.
Downhill running
go
attack.
Go study football. And even Nick Saban eventually ended up switching to what is now spread, tempo, pace, and space. you know, kind of a high-octane progressive passing game. And now, ironically, well, I don't know if they're running it now because they changed OCs, but Mac Brown was running a damn air raid when he went to North Carolina. And yet he was in the midst of it in the Big 12. He was in the midst of all basically an offensive identity that had terraformed the Big 12 and was the really kind of the experimental ground of offensive evolution in all of football, not just college football, right here in the Big 12. And yet Mac Brown didn't want to see it and refused to see it. So his lack of being a football theorist ultimately drove Texas down his path of, you know, the lack of an offensive identity. And ultimately, that's getting back to what you said. That's why you aren't producing any premium positions in the NFL, because you can get your own ish together.
Yeah, and Jeff, I'm glad you brought this up too and asking about the wide receiver, because we talked a lot about the show and, like, you know, the, where the depth of Texas is this season, and it's been at maybe you just say wide receiver and then like last year D-line, but more so the interior D-line. And if you look at the NFL where the salaries have went in recent years, it's pretty crazy. Because, like, you have, of course, your quarterbacks. There are 17 that are paid over $29 million. But I just quickly pulled the guys that are getting paid over $20 million. The most is wide receiver. There are 14 in the NFL getting paid over $20 million. If you look over $21 million, there's 9. In relation to that, left tackles down to only 3 get paid more than $21 million. But if you look at interior, D-line is 6. And if you look at the edge rusher at 7, so the NFL has got to the point where interior D-line, you have more top-tier players in the salary cap in the interior D-line and edge rusher, but the most overall is wide receiver. Even if you combine interior D-line and edge rusher, there are 13 players getting paid over $20 million per year. Wide receivers at 14, so it's pretty crazy because after that, you had 3 at left tackle, 3 at cornerback, 2 at right tackle, and then the only positions that don't have anybody that's over 20, you have one linebacker, Roquan Smith, right at $20 million, and one left guard, Quentin Nelson. Everybody else is below that.
So I just want to run down the premium position picks, or not the premium picks. I'm saying premium too much on this show. top 100 picks Texas has had, and let's look at the positions, and you can see why this program has struggled the way it has. I'll start with they didn't have any top 100 picks in the 2012 draft coming off the 11 season. But so you got to go to the 2013 draft. Kenny Vaccaro, Swiss Army Knife DB, Marquise Goodwin, wide receiver. Nobody drafted at all in 2014. I think y'all are starting to sense a pattern here already. Mm-hmm. 2015, Malcolm Brown on the interior defensive line, but a different kind of defensive tackle. And Jordan Hicks is an off-ball linebacker. Then you go all the way to 2017, Deontay Foreman is a running back. Again, premium talent. Not a premium position. 2018, Connor Williams, offensive tackle, Malik Jefferson, off-ball linebacker. Then you go to 2020, Brandon Jones, Swiss Army Knife DB, Devin Duvernay, wide receiver. You go to the 21 draft, Sam Cosmi, offensive tackle, Joseph Osai, pass rusher. And then this, the most recent draft, your two top 100 picks, Bijan Robinson at running back, DeMarvion Overshown at off-ball linebacker. So we're not seeing quarterbacks and a bunch of wide receivers and a plethora of pass rushers. And you haven't had a top 100 corner since Curtis Brown.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's what this new, the next draft is supposed to be all about, right? For Sark, from what he's built. Like, if Xavier Worthy's up there and then your Quinn Ewers, all these mock drafts for the 2024 draft, have Texas with some premium positions.
Mm-hmm. That's where I was going with all this. Yes,
you know what I mean. If it ends up coming to fruition,
if you're gonna hit your ceiling, which, man, my colleagues at 24/7 Sports, Brad Crawford specifically, Brad went out on that limb. He said Texas is making the playoff. He put Texas in the Rose Bowl in his way too early bowl projections. Which, I mean, if you're gonna win the Big 12, be in contention for the Big 12, then you're probably in the mix to be in the playoff.
You got
to
be in the conversation.
Yes. So, but I think Texas, Rod, to your point, they're going to get there. They're going to reach their ceiling with their premium, because you lost two premium talents, LaRoshon and Bijan. You lost a premium talent with DeMarvion Overshown. Now you need your talented guys, those premium positions, you need them to take that next step. That's Quinn. That's Xavier Worthy. That's Kelvin Banks. I would say not necessarily Ryan Watts at corner, because we kind of know what Ryan Watts is.
I agree with that.
I think it's Terrence Brooks or whoever's opposite of Ryan Watts.
Mm-hmm.
that corner needs to produce at a consistent level, at a really high level. And then where's your pass rush going to come from? Speaking of Aaron Donald, Matt, and you talking about interior defensive line, and if Byron Murphy's your best pass rusher, then okay, you could, if you have that one guy that an offense has to know, we got to have two or three bodies occupy him every snap, everything funnels out easier. I know it was over 20 years ago, but Rod, I'm sure playing coverage for you was a lot easier. Sean, let me rephrase that. I'm sure Sean, I'm just all over the place, everybody. I apologize. I'm sure Sean Rogers and Casey Hampton made life a lot easier for you on the back end.
I was a young corner, too, sophomore, and I had those guys on the line. And it was basically cover for, if you can cover for 2.5 seconds, you're good.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's why we started playing bump and run, honestly, I believe, is because he wanted, he said, man, basically, if I can get a Quinn Jammer on one side and a technician playing bump and run on the other side, and I can get those two monsters, two war daddies, Casey Hampton and Ashawn Rogers, blowing up the line of scrimmage and getting pressure where quarterbacks hate it the most, right up the gut. Man, there's why would I give the quarterback a 3-step read? Why would I give him quick game?
Yeah.
That's stupid. And with those two guys there, take away the quick game. You know what I mean? And then he'll be panicked from, you know, basically from the jump, and it's exactly the way it went down. So it was easy. It was probably the easiest job I had covering was that year with Casey Hampton and Ashawn Rogers.
And that's where you always hear people talk about tying the two together, the coverage and the pass rush. And that's where that responsibility of the DBs, those first 3 seconds, because if you have that reliable pass rush and you know that they can get home in 3 seconds, like that's why we talk a lot about time to throw and quarterbacks being able to get the ball out early and how we really saw good signs from the Texas offense this year compared to the previous year in year one with Sark, because you were chopping a full second off of the quarterback getting the ball out that fast. And that's sort of how you could have a guy like, say, Tom Brady prolong his career. If you look at him over the past decade, his ability to understand pre-snap, and we lived it with Colt McCoy and Jordan Shipley at that time, and how Colt was able to set this all-time, you know, what we thought wouldn't be broken, but completion percentage record that was now had the rest of college football evolving towards, and it's that quick game and getting it out and understanding. So if you can marry those two together and have those physical corners to be the ones, we need you to win for 2.5 seconds. We're going to trust our guys to get there on the back, on the other end. And once you marry those two together, and especially with the guy that can get there from point A, you don't have to worry about the outside, which maybe takes a step longer or two. If you got a guy at the middle disrupting everything, then you're just home free.
I asked you last year, Rod, and you proved yourself right and maybe answered my question, and the Texas defense and answered my question. I asked you, man, does the Pat Narduzzi, Gary Patterson way of playing coverage, can it still work, or have offenses just kind of figured it out? And I think what I've come to realize is something I talked about last week. You know, no matter what coverage you run, you're a cover two guy, you're a cover three guy, you're a pattern match quarters, whatever coverage you're in. There are route combinations, there are passing game things in a passing game that can beat every coverage.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's one coverage that just completely, you know,
covers all bases.
Because nowadays you almost want to mix things up, because these offenses and quarterbacks are so smart that showing somebody the same thing over and over and over can really be manipulated.
So, Rod, my question is, you know, because Texas did get much better at playing, and kind of the more – I haven't studied it extensively, but the little studying I've done, just pulling up YouTube videos and reading some articles, it makes sense why bunch formations and leveraging formations the way some opponents did, whether you're in 3-by-1s or, you know, bunches or whatever. That's why we saw Texas struggle with that running pattern match quarters, because those formations, the uneven formations, it really starts to throw, it can throw all your assignments off. It can throw your rules off. Mm-hmm. Communication has to be paramount in those situations.
And those guys, you know, they're new to one another, so there's lack of familiarity there between their style of communication. They're all supposed to be seeing the same thing. They don't see the same thing, right? You want to make sure you're seeing the exact same thing, and that's what the film study is for. When you're all in this classroom together, when, you know, coach asks a question, you should all be seeing the same thing, that mental rep. You know what I mean? You should have a version of the same answer that he has when you're watching same formation, down distance, and all those things. And so obviously I don't know what's going on in the classroom, but I think they did get better with it over, you know, the course of the season. But – I wonder this year if there's going to keep the Gary Patterson kind of pattern match thing going. Nobody played more pattern match coverage last year, cover four, than Texas.
Yeah.
In the Big 12. In the Big 12. Mm-hmm. They played a ton of it. So I remember the patterns that beat them. I mean, that's why you go back and look at, you know, Iowa State, and you go look at those, the Bama game.
TCU.
I mean, it was empty. Not really TCU. TCU didn't do – they didn't do much of, like, they got – actually, Texas defense played pretty well against this. You had that one busted coverage. Yeah. I'm just talking about the ability to move the ball continuously on Texas.
Yeah.
Bama did really good. Iowa State did really good because they used a ton of bunch formations, ton of empty formations. We're talking about extreme examples of formational, you know, advantages.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you can do that against Texas, I think you can find ways, obviously, to manipulate their eye discipline. That's what you really want to do. And that's what the bunch formation does. You got to look at 3-4 different things at one time. Mm-hmm. All I need is one of y'all to be wrong.
Yeah.
On what you're supposed to be reading in your keys, and I got it. And that's why the bunch formation is really the way to go against Texas next season. Lots of empty formation, too. Jeff Traylor proved that again with UTSA. Now, they took that from the Bama recipe. Give Bill O'Brien a lot of credit, but they probably used empty formation better than anybody against Texas. And they Texas didn't really have an answer for it. In my opinion, they didn't use it enough. They should have used it more.
Yeah.
Iowa State really exposed Texas with the bunch formation, and people started using that. And then the burst concept, that's what Matt's talking about. We saw Case State getting with the burst concept, TCU getting with the burst concept. Essentially, you're talking about a delayed slant or what they call a hesitant slant, where you kind of hesitate. It's kind of a stop and go slant, if you will. And that essentially destroys the read of pattern match zone, right? Mm-hmm. So it basically violates the rules of your pattern match zone. And you're going to see more teams come up with ways to violate the rules of Texas pattern match zone, whether it be delayed releases or downfield switch routes, which is what, you know, that's why a lot of guys ended up wide open, too. You go look at the Iowa State Xavier Hutchinson, he drops it, but there's just a, you know, downfield switch routes, which Texas also had trouble with. So those things are going to come up. I mean, it's just, those were the only concepts, I'm very nitpicky, that really worked against Texas, but that's just, like, that's just reps of playing pattern match zone, in my opinion, and everybody being on the same page, too.
Yeah, and those are the type of things, like, what you're talking about there, it's why we always bring up Shano, because, like, his offense is, like, they lie to the defenses almost more than anybody, and if you can get to that point where you can be able to have that manipulation where you know what you're facing, and it's just what those good, well-coached teams do, they're able to violate those rules of a defense and make you understand what you're facing against and use that against you.
So my question, Rod, for you, and I yield all matters on a secondary to you. I feel like Texas this year, even losing Anthony Cook, who was a really big part of that thing on the back end last year. I think even losing Anthony Cook, I think you've got enough experience with playing pattern match cover four, and your personnel, I think, is going to be better than it was last year. Whether that's some combination of Jaren Thompson, Keaton Crawford, and Jalen Catalon at safety, another year for Jahdae Barron at that nickel position. I'm thinking probably Terrence Brooks at that field side corner, and then obviously Ryan Watson, the boundary, extra year for those guys. I feel like the combination of personnel plus experience with running pattern match cover four, there's no reason why the secondary shouldn't be better and maybe significantly better considering where you're at.
It's all about the field corner.
Yes.
And you know, really, that's the biggest question, right? Because I'm with you. I think Jaren Thompson's going to be veteran signal caller kind of back there. He's been, you know, probably in this secondary now as a veteran more than anybody else, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, he's got more experience than anybody else.
Experience, right? The rest of these guys kind of came in a little bit later after Jaren Thompson. So he should be the elder statesman in that secondary. I guarantee you he'll be helping Jalen Catalon get, you know, lined up and get him situated, too, with you know, all the different terminology and all that kind of stuff. And we know now with Keaton Crawford that at least they talk like they believe they got 3 starting safeties potentially.
Yeah, the Catalon factor, I know the field corner is huge. The Catalon factor for me is the thing that can put this over the top, because if he can stay healthy and you find productive ways to use him, the guy was one of the best defensive backs in the SEC for a reason. Like, he's a hell of a player.
And he had insurance policy behind him, too.
Yes.
If Keaton Crawford, if they like him as much as they say, which I think they do.
And I think it was huge, too, for you know, B.J. Allen and Larry Turner Gooden not to go into the portal after spring ball.
That's true.
You know?
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. That's a really good point about it. But I think the field corner is going to be the biggest concern, and a lot of those coverages that we're talking about, the pattern match zone, and a lot of the ways you can attack it formationally, with different schemes and tactics, it will be on the field side.
That's why
they will, no question.
I heard from a pretty good source that's why you saw DeSean Jameson play more in the bowl game than Terrence Brooks, because that Texas staff, I was told the staff felt like Washington's going to run a lot of bunch formations.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to leverage their formations differently.
That NFL quarterback, NFL wideouts.
And DeSean Jameson's just seen it more. He's more mentally prepared for it. Terrence Brooks physically is the better player, but they just felt like DeSean was mentally more prepared to handle what Washington was going to throw.
A safer option.
Yeah.
You know, he may not be a higher upside, and we may lose a little in playmaking ability, but, man, I'll take that over a guy that may give up a big bomb and cost us the game potentially. So it's all about trust. I think Terrence Brooks is going to win that spot, but there's no doubt if I am an offensive coordinator, I'm going after him.
Yeah.
I'm going after him. Who else are you going to go after?
Yeah.
You're going to go after Ryan Watts? Well, good luck with that. I mean, the guy's pretty damn good at what he does. I think you can get over on him, but it's downfield, and you better hope you get downfield before Byron Murphy or Anthony Hill's in that backfield, right?
Yeah.
So, or they're putting pressure on the quarterback, which Texas is one of the best in the country at doing. So that's not really that's a 50-50, but you want to make sure your wide receiver can win that one-on-one. You can go at Jadae Barron, but we've talked about it. I expect him to be an all-conference defender this year. Mm-hmm. So that ain't, to me, that's not really a likely option or a winning option. Go at the safeties if you want to. Jaron Thompson can cover. Jalen Catalon can cover. If Keaton Crawford's out there, I'd go after him. But if I'm an offensive coordinator, I'm starting with that field corner. I'm going to test his eyes. I'm going to test his discipline. I'm going to test his ability to be able to play the deep ball, to play the quick game, to play everything. So I think Terrence Brooks is going to make them plays, but he no doubt he's going to get tested.
And, you know, you're talking about, like, we brought this up a couple weeks ago when we were talking about, you know, in the ideal world, like, why somebody like a Nick Saban plays so much man. It's like when you can get to that point where you have these guys that you trust that they're so good, Texas is starting to get those type of guys where you have a Watts, and then you can see, say, the future with a guy like Brooks. But then whenever you have these offenses doing these things to, you know, use your inexperience against you, and you reason why you have to go to a guy like, say, Jameson in that situation, especially when you're talking about these different bunch formations or these different ways that they're able to get confusion amongst players. It's the same thing that you see, like, say, in the NBA. You love having that one guy that can fight over every screen and just chase a dude man-to-man. If you had a team full of Tony Allens to do that, you would do that all day long. But that's when you get switching to come in, because not every human can do these things, but you can, as a team, feel more comfortable covering it. And that's just sort of where you can marry these zone concepts when you have a weakness and do and be just as effective to not give up that huge play. But the goal is always, man, if I can get to that point where we can just have man-to-man and have our guys out there and man up and be able to have confidence that they can just beat that guy in front of them no matter what they're doing and what they're crossing up and making the, you know, the deciphering, the thought process, all the different things that cause you to hesitate to get beat. Texas is looking to get to that point where once you can get out there and just play man, then it loosens up the numbers. You can have more going home or going in to allocate to whatever skill guys you need, and that's where you're sort of striving to get to.
Yep. Rod, which option do you like better? Like, let's say we'll prepare for contingencies here. Let's say it's not Terrence Brooks, right? He, whatever. He's not a factor.
Yeah.
Which option do you like better? Do you like running out, you know, Gavin Holmes or Austin Jordan or whoever it is? Maybe it's Manny Muhammad. I don't know. Do you like just having somebody else at field corner, or would you move Jadae Barron to that field corner and roll somebody else at that star position?
I don't know. It depends on, you know, how well my safeties can cover. You know, can Jalen Catalon play the nickel? I don't know. Like, he's stout enough, compact enough. Like,
I almost don't want him to.
We think he'll get hurt doing it?
Yeah.
Could be.
I mean,
if he's going to get hurt playing, he's going to get hurt. I mean, God bless him. I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just Jordan Whittington thing. It's like, people are like, don't do that. Don't put him in the backfield. Like, don't put him in the backfield. He's a football player.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're playing football.
About, man? Like, come on, man. Yeah. If you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt. Like, we can't build game plans. We're trying to protect guys. Like, no. We don't do that, man. We don't bubble wrap guys. No. You're going to play. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. That's why they got Keaton Crawford back there. So my question would be, can he play the nickel?
Spoken like a true nickel.
Yeah, he's an instinctive player, right? You want guys who are instinctual and guys who have great kind of football IQ, really high football IQ. He's proven that. And he's undersized, which means he's used to handling himself. Now, I know he can hit too, but, I mean, is he willing to play nickel, I guess, is the bigger question. Because I think skill-wise, he could do it. And I think it would add to his value in the NFL, too. They would love a guy that can play nickel and also play safety, Quandre Diggs, right? They love that kind of stuff. So I would try to see if he could play it. Jade Barron, I know he could go out there and play the corner, so that would probably be my first option, but it only depends on if I trust the player who is behind him at nickel. And right now I don't know.
Yeah,
like
I said, we don't even know. Is it Gavin Holmes? Yeah. Is it Austin Jordan?
What's the
drop
off between your second team corner, second team field corner, and second team nickel? That's what I need to know. And which one do you trust the most or the least? Because if not, then we might go to three safety packages.
Right.
Texas, if you got three safety, why can't you run three safety packages? Everybody in football right now is running three safety packages. The only time Texas ran three safety packages last year was against Texas Tech. The only time I saw it in my film review. So, hell, everybody's running three safeties. Why can't you run some three safety packages?
Yeah,
three really good safeties. You got two NFL safeties. You can't run three safety packages. So my contingency, since you had Dan Quinn here, all right, to speak, and you know him really well, Sark. And, by the way, nobody runs more three safety packages than the Cowboys because they perfected the three safety rotation, and they got probably the best safety core in the NFL. Why don't we steal some of those concepts and you run a three safety package? By the way, Iowa State has made a living and a killing off running three safety package in the Big 12. Give them a taste of their own damn medicine every now and then since you're so deep. So I'm going to think it's contingency plans. You should just be kind of looking at the best way to put the best 11 guys on the field. If you feel like your safeties are better than if you get somebody hurt or if, you know, Terrence Bruce can't get it done, that your safeties are part of your best 11, get them out there.
And you know what? Catalan can do that because he played in that Barry Odom defense at Arkansas.
Come on, man.
Yeah, is they played three safety.
Is a healthy Jalen Catalan, like when you think about how that Iowa State defense is constructed, is a healthy Jalen Catalan not like the ideal middle safety in that defense?
Oh, yeah. Because you can roll him down to the box. You can let him go cover. He can play middle field. Oh, when a guy that can do everything.
Perfect for that.
I'm telling you. I don't know what. Except they played it one time last year against Tech, and maybe it seemed matchup, obviously, in game specific, because I didn't see it a lot. I would love to see it there. And I think they did it with Jade Barron.
Yeah, that might be.
And I think they almost wanted to do it because of the mobile quarterback, too. Having another guy closer to line.
That could be.
But no, Jade Barron's what I was going to bring up because if you look at last year, just in straight slot coverage, I mean, Jaron Thompson was elite. He gave up a 56.3 NFL passer rating on 121 slot snaps. Jade Barron, by far, had the highest volume, 244 coverage snaps there. And is just 76.6 in his coverage NFL passer rating allowed. So, I mean, yeah, Jalen Gilbo ended up playing 107 snaps there. He was, I mean, a 90 NFL passer rating isn't great, but it isn't really bad either. It isn't over 100, so it's still serviceable. Those are your main guys to where the ones that struggled at it, Cook, he gave up a 112 NFL passer,
which is why he moved to safety.
Yep, and 195. And then the other ones, Keaton Crawford played 47 snaps there. He was at 116. So, I mean,
he had just moved there last year.
Yep, between Jaron Thompson and Jade Barron, it looks like you have two guys that are really confident that based on matchup and their strengths, I think that's how you can really play them.
I like that. You can do it with Jade Barron.
Of this, though, it just reinforces, Rod, your point that Terrence Brooks might be the most pivotal piece to whatever this defensive ceiling is.
Yeah, because you're only stronger. I'm not saying he's a weak link, but he's an unproven commodity
for you.
You know what I mean? If I'm an offensive coordinator, building game plans early on is pretty simple. You stay away from the proven commodities and you attack the unproven ones. They prove themselves throughout the game. And at one point, you ain't got 11 All-Americans on this team.
Yeah.
Hey, you got some good players, but ain't 11 All-Americans. All I need to find is one guy that's average to below average. And that's all it takes to build an offensive game plan.
And I pulled Catalan's numbers, too, and it looks like 2020 he struggled. He gave up 134 NFL passer rating on 89 covered snaps. But in 2021, he was much better. He only had 23 covered snaps before he got hurt. And he was at 87.5, but that sort of aligns with what we're saying, more traditional safety, that he can play back-end type safety and you can have somebody else roll down into the nickel.
I mean, you could have Jaron Thompson roll down there. The bottom line is, and you could slide Barron over the corner, but like I said, it just reinforces Rod's point, and I even took it a step further. I think he is the most pivotal piece to whatever this defensive ceiling is going to be. I think it's going to be with Terrence Brooks being your field corner, and I'm not saying he's got to play at an all Big 12 level, but he's got to be, you got to get it consistently from him week in and week out.
Yeah, you got to get sure his baseline is one that is, I'm going to say, at a conference level. I don't know if he'll make all conference, because he's going to get tested a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, I think when you go look at targets by the end of the season, he'll probably have more targets like directed at him than any other DB in that secondary. It just makes sense. Plus on the field side.
Yeah, that's to be expected.
Gavin Holmes only played like 12 snaps each year there, so yeah, he hasn't done much.
That's true. We don't know about him.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to think about it from that. And you know, from a personnel standpoint, Rod, like this is why if you're Sark and you're PK and you're Terry Joseph, like, yeah, your field corner is can get exposed in pattern match cover four. Because like you said, cover four, no matter how you want to run it, it basically devolves into man coverage at some point.
And formationally, you can stress it as much as you want. Because if you run bunch or you run, you know, 3-by-1 sets, you can really kind of manufacture your one-on-ones.
Yeah. But for those coaches, this is why you recruited 6-foot-plus corners that are long and that are really good in press coverage.
Yeah.
This is why you did it.
Yep.
So exactly now we're going to figure out – this is when we're really going to figure out, because year one, take it for whatever it was. Year two, people can talk about the Gary Patterson influence, and that's certainly a factor you got to figure in. Mm-hmm. But there is no question that the 2023 Texas defense, this will be Pete Kwiatkowski's defense, because the personnel is in place that they've either recruited or developed. There's no Gary Patterson around for people to give him credit and say, oh, it's GP. The GP is the reason why we're hanging with Alabama and TCU. This is all going to be – this is PK's baby now.
I agree with that, I think he'll be fine. I think the first year, you know, there was obviously a lot of transition for him into a different conference, and I think he miscalculated the culture of the conference. Then Gary Patterson came in and was able to interpret, decipher the conference for PK, and I think PK's got it now. I'm not saying you're not going to miss GP, because I do think you're going to miss GP. We know he was helping game plan for games like Bama and TCU, two of your biggest opponents last year. You didn't win those games, but you were in those games, obviously down to the fourth quarter. I do think that PK now, because I love that hire initially. You guys know that. I love that. Mm-hmm. I actually like that hire more than I like the Sark hire initially. But he did struggle, but I do think PK is a damn good DC. I say he just didn't know the lay of the land. Sometimes the map is not the terrain, and I think now he knows the terrain as opposed to looking at a map and going, oh, I can do this. Like, nah, you can't. The Big 12 is a different beast, man. It's a different beast.
And I think on top of that, Rod, I mean, they got to the point where that Washington defense, when he was running that thing, and, you know, he and Jimmy Lake had a really big hand in that too. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where they were at such a level with personnel. There weren't that many offenses in the country that were going to mess with that Washington defense. I mean, when you're talking about running out – Shaq Thompson and Danny Shelton and Buda Baker. I mean, just go look at the premium draft picks that defense produced. They had the personnel to pretty much do whatever they wanted.
But that is the question, though, right? Because the biggest concern when PK came in was, how is he going to do without Jimmy Lake coordinating the coverages with his fronts and with his pressures? And I guess, you know, he didn't really answer that question or answer the bell in the first year. Bring in Gary Patterson, someone who's famous for doing what? Coordinating pressures with blitzes and fronts, all right, as well as anybody in the history of college football, you could argue. And then, obviously, the light went off for PK. So the question is now that you've lost the other, I know Terry Joseph is supposed to be this guy that's coordinating the coverages now too, but, you know, when you had Jimmy Lake and you had a Gary Patterson there helping you coordinate the coverages, you had great defenses. Now you don't have that. Can Terry Joseph be that guy? Because it didn't seem like he was that guy to help coordinate that defense or secondary coverage-wise in the first season.
That's where I hope, you know, he still continues to have a dialogue with Dan Quinn, because Dan Quinn is a front guy who's been really good mixing his fronts with his coverages.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's where PK is trying to get to, because all the training wheels are off. He doesn't have Jimmy Lake and he doesn't have Gary Patterson. And now he's got his personnel. There really are no excuses to me why this defense should take a step back.
The best thing that I think that PK's got going from now, even though he's lost Gary Patterson and trying to tie the fronts with the coverages, is that he's got veterans in like the central nervous system of the defense. Yeah. You got a safety, Jaron Thompson, who's an elder statesman now. You got a guy, Jalen Catalan, coming in, who's seen a lot of football experience-wise. Jalen Ford's probably your best player on defense. He's at the heart of your damn defense, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got, you know, your strength of your defense is probably your interior D-line with guys like Byron Murphy and guys like Devondre Sweat and Alfred Collins. So,
Don't forget Trill,
yeah. So I think for him, that's his saving grace, is that we've seen – you know, the last four or five defensive coordinators at Texas, most of the time when they have a really good defense, it's because they got veteran leadership right at that central nervous system. He's got that this year. To me, I think he's going to have a good year.
And to finish out the central nervous system, just after pulling the numbers for
Jaren Thompson and seeing that maybe he could be a good answer at times to go down into the nickel. It makes you want to have a safety that can cover. And if you look at the six games before Catalan was injured in 2021, he had 194 coverage snaps, which is a pretty good sample size. And he was elite in both man and in zone. In zone, it was a 50 NFL passer rating allowed, which is like on that same level. Now, you had Jamison do that as a corner, but this is elite. And then in man coverage, which is tougher to be elite at, it was a 79.2 NFL passer rating allowed. So, I mean, you look at that 2021 year, he was elite no matter what coverage you put him in. It was just injuries that kept him from playing last year. So, like, that's top tier in the SEC, as good as you could ask for.
I agree.
And I think, you know, the pass rush component, because other than the field corner, the pass rush in terms of affecting the quarterback, and I'm not necessarily talking about the sack numbers. I'm saying if you're affecting the quarterback, your number of batted balls at the line of scrimmage, your number of forced incompletions, your number of PBUs, your number of interceptions, all those numbers need to go up if you're affecting the quarterback.
It's true.
It's not necessarily
disruption.
Not necessarily just sacks. You got to look at those havoc plays. Mm-hmm. And your havoc numbers have to be there from your defensive front, especially now that you don't have DeMarvian Overshaw. You're going to use Anthony Hill as a blitzer. I don't know why you wouldn't, but you can't expect him to just as a true freshman be as good as DeMarvian Overshaw was there. And maybe I think, Rod, anytime I hear people talk about the pass rush from Texas, the disruption, it goes back to Baron Sorrell or the edge opposite of Justice Finkley. Maybe we've been thinking about it all wrong. Maybe Byron Murphy is your best pass rusher, and the PFF numbers will back that up. Mm-hmm. Maybe he really is your best pass rusher. That's where your pressure is going to come from.
Yeah, which is not – I mean, that's not a problem at all, because you can still collapse
it's
the pocket.
A strength.
Yeah, you can still collapse the pocket from right there. It's just a non-traditional way to do it. And I think basically people like edge rushers to be the natural – kind of basically your natural best pass rusher on the team, or at least your featured highlighted pass rusher on the team, because it's easier to arrange one-on-ones. Y'all just trying to arrange one-on-ones, defensively, offensively. How can I get my best player one-on-one against that other guy, hopefully a matchup advantage? And on the edge, easier to do, right? You're just on the edge, going up against that guy. You create space by your BGL, create space by your pass rushing technique, your lanes, all that kind of stuff. And you can do it on your own. When a guy's in the interior, hard to create a one-on-one, right? Because, yeah, they may leave you one-on-one with the guard, but then you get a little help from the center, get a little help from, you know, the back chipping inside, whatever it may be. So you got to use twists and stunts up front. You got to blitz very strategically in the interior gaps, try to create those one-on-one opportunities for Byron Murphy, try to feature him. They're not doing that. They're just saying, all right, Byron Murphy, just we're going to leave you in there to get create pressure. It's going to happen early, and then it will fade. It will fade because teams, they do film study, and they'll go, all right, we ain't letting that dude get one-on-one with anybody. We're going to have him blocked, head up with a guy, but we're also going to give you some help so you can shade the outside. The center will help you on the inside. We'll end up basically deciding to isolate our blockers on him and try to create a way to keep him in a, you know, a two-on-one situation.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you're creating the one-on-ones for him. That's on PK.
I could see, for that reason, Rod, what you just said, I could see Byron Murphy having a huge day against Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Because Bama could say, you know, Nick Saban could say, hey, we think ours are better than yours. If you think yours are better, go beat it. And I could see Byron Murphy having, you know, 3.5 tackles for loss and a sack and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep. And
Bama.
Also, to that
totally
point,
agree with that.
We saw last year, like I remember seeing a film during Keandre Coburn's film breakdown around the draft, and people were talking, saying, man, he's a man eater. And it was Alabama was doubling him and how much a huge body like that frees up the rest of your line. Murphy's a totally different type of interior lineman that isn't necessarily there. But, I mean, if you that's where those large humans that you, like, start talking about. Okay. He likes to have one of those that can make you have to allocate multiple people that'll free up and either make, say, you don't have edge rushers, it makes it a lot easier for them, or it makes that guy directly next to him get that one-on-one. And that's where, like, when we talked about the premium positions in the NFL and the morphing to the point that, like, now interior edge rushers compared to – or interior linemen compared to edge rushers, the highest paid one is Aaron Donald. He's paid more than any edge rusher because if you are elite there, they can see what your value and make it worth it. And you're still talking only 7 edge rushers getting paid over $20 million, 6 interior defensive linemen. That used to not be the case up until, like, the last 5 years.
Remember – I asked Sark the game week, you know, before the Louisiana Monroe game, or maybe it was in camp, about I don't remember when I asked it, whenever I asked the damn question about, you know, pressure or coverage, mm-hmm. which one were you going to focus on? And the quote, I don't remember his exact quote, but it's something along the lines of, well, not everybody has Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying Byron Murphy's Aaron Donald, but you have your own little spark plug there in the middle mm-hmm. of your defensive line who's probably your best pass rusher.
Yeah, and he's a little undersized, which is good, actually. Yeah. If you're going to be a pass rusher, lowest pad level wins, you get great BGO, which I hear he's got unbelievable BGO, then, man, those guys, you'll get underneath those guys consistently. And then they'll decide, you know what, man, we just got to go 2-on-1. We got to put two guys on them. And then you win. He's not going to like it all the time, but then the defense wins.
I buy stock into guys, and this has been the case with Byron Murphy since he got here. When you start hearing about guys showing out on the practice field and be like, hey, watch this guy. And then the few snaps he gets to play when those are impactful snaps, and then the more snaps he gets, you're like, okay, it's not like this is leveling off. He's still productive. I mean, I'll buy stock in that guy. If he's getting, you know, with Coburn and Ojemo gone, if he's getting more reps this year, then I'll buy stock in Byron Murphy being an All Big 12 player.
For sure. I'm with you on that. Well, he's been trending, right? He has not really had a setback or a regression. He has just been kind of trending in the right way. It's been a linear progression for him, and I think he's ready to peak. It seems like his peak year here. Think about guys like Coburn. They were hard to follow because it was still inconsistent, right? You didn't get that linear trajectory where he was always trending upward.
Yeah.
He started trending upward, then there'd be some regression, and then, you know, he'd have a down game or a period, and then he'd have another great game. It was really inconsistent. And then his last year was like, man, where did this Kendrick Coburn come from?
Mm-hmm.
He is consistently good, and even consistently good to be great at times. And that's what you want, and I think Byron Murphy – I think he's ready to have an All-Big 12 year.
I feel like what we're saying about Byron Murphy right now and what's being said behind that burnt orange curtain rod, as you like to call it, about Byron Murphy, it feels like the same tone and tenor of what was being said this time a year ago by Jalen Ford.
Well, and it's literally what Keandre Coburn said about Byron Murphy last summer.
He did say that.
He said that's our Aaron Donald. And we're like, yeah, well, we can see that body type and that motor, but hopefully he gets to that point. But Coburn did say that about him.
That's true.
Yeah.
I remember that. You're right.
I think, and this is no disrespect because Ojemo and Coburn both got drafted, which you can't take that away from those guys. I think if Murphy and Sweat are playing more snaps, tell me why that shouldn't be a more impactful tandem as your primary duo up front. Because I love Tavondre Sweat. We talked about just the athleticism and size combo he brings, and we know what Byron Murphy brings to the table. I think that's two really damn disruptive tackles.
It is, but think about what Kendrick Coburn said last year. I thought it was really interesting. And I forget the number that he gave, but he was like, man, we actually don't get that many snaps in the game when you break it down.
Yeah.
And he said, we are so deep, and the other guys are really good playing at a high level. He said, man, you're just hungry to make a play out there to try to make sure that you continue to get snaps. He said we were dividing up snaps because Bo Davis likes to have guys fresh in that interior D line. And I remember him saying, like, yeah, man, we actually don't. I was like, really? He's like, nah, man, we play a lot of guys. And think about it, they play a lot of guys in the interior last year. And I think it created a culture with that interior D line of they were like some rabid dogs. Let off the leash when they got out there because they didn't get as many reps as you think because they were so deep. They were the deepest interior D-line in the country. They were the deepest. And think about it. Say it out loud. Mm-hmm. And it's tough for me to, you know, be able to think about and to contemplate that this was the deepest interior D-line in the country.
When Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton are your number three group,
that's what I'm saying. Like, when you break it down, you're like, you can debate it. Like, oh, we won't debate it. So maybe they were number three. They still were top three. It is unbelievable. And when you start thinking about breaking it down, it does make sense that they just didn't get a lot of reps. I haven't went back and looked at it per game. But I remember him saying something along those lines. And I thought that's great for fostering an environment of really accountability in that room. That everybody's got to play at a high level. Or, I'm going to take five snaps away from you. Give it to Sweat. Sweat's over here balling. Like nobody wanted that to happen.
Yeah.
So everybody was in there with that dog in them and playing with a sense of urgency on every down. And I think it helped that room. So I wonder this year if you'll lose some of that. Yeah, you can play a lot of guys, but they want everybody was fresh and everybody was hungry as hell for them snaps. Yeah. And now, yeah, you may play more of Byron Murphy and more of Tavondre Sweat, but you ain't getting them pushed by Coburn and by Ojomo. We know how Ojomo gets down. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I think you're going to lose a little bit just because, obviously, you lose two NFL guys. But also, man, I don't know if Alfred Collins and, you know, Vernon has already been brought in, are going to have that type of mentality because they were on the lower end of getting some of those snaps. Yep. Are they going to be able to have that same mentality that Coburn and Ojomo had where, now, man, we're a dog and I want more snaps and I'm willing to take them from my own damn teammate. That's how I'm about to go out here and get down. I don't know if you'll have that. I hope so. I hope so. But that D-line, interior D-line, had a different mentality last year, man. And I think it was because they were so damn deep. I remember being in a room that deep. I remember being in a room with multiple NFL draft picks being around. I remember playing in the second 3-4 of the guys that played in the NFL. I remember them, and I remember what it turned me into. You ain't taking my job. Like, you ain't taking my snaps. You ain't taking my reps. God bless you. But I remember what it turned me into, and it turned them into the same thing. It turned you into a dog.
Yep. And to those, put the numbers on what you're talking about, there wasn't a D lineman in the top 9 in snap count on defense. If you go across it now, you have an edge rusher.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You had edge rushers and a Gofu. And Sorrell, two of them that were between the 600 to 800 count. But if you look at just straight D linemen, because it went Jaron Thompson at the top, 861, Jalen Ford, 815, Watts, 773, Ogofu, 766, Barron, 727, Overshown, 712, Cook, 699, Sorrell, 631, Jameson, 630 or 628, all the way down to Sweat, 461. To Coburn, 413. And then if you look positions 10 through 16, you have five of the D linemen in there. It's Sweat, 463, Coburn, 413, Murphy, 393, Ojomo, 376, Alfred Collins, 260, and Vernon Broughton, 242.
Bro, they're playing like 35, under 40 snaps a game, like 35 to 38 snaps, whatever it is. So, yeah, that tracks to what Coburn said. He's like, nah, man, we don't get a lot of reps, so I got to make sure I make the most of them. You're damn right, you better. And for Bo Davis, it's easy. Like, you go in there in the film room, you go, damn, man, you got three bad reps in a row. That's easy. Let me give whoever balled out in film, give them five more reps, take five from you. That's easy.
Yeah.
That's psychologically, that is devastating for a player, man. Trust me. That kind of demotion, it is devastating. It will make you stay out after practice, get to practice early, hit the weight room early, hit the film room again. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember that DBU mentality, and I think they had it in that D-line room with Bo Davis. You know how Bo Davis gets down? Mm-hmm. Do we know BD energy, Bo Davis energy? You know how that dude's getting down in that room? Yeah. You're taking a play off. You loafing on a play. That dude eviscerates you in front of your teammates. And undresses you, man, dog cusses you, and then gives your reps to another man.
Yeah, when I go to the practice field, I don't want to look Bo Davis in the eye.
Nobody does. Mm-hmm. I look down when I go by Bo Davis.
That's why they put D line on the far field. Like, hey, Coach Bo do his
you
thing down there
hear
with
what
his guys.
Says. Man, that'd but be and scary. Also when you have those type of numbers, it gives you the ability to platoon those guys and accentuate their strengths so they're amplified. Yep. They first are maximized so they're optimized in every level. Not only are they not lacking energy or getting tired as the game goes on, they have more energy, but they're being put in the positions that they're best at.
You're right.
And you're able to, and especially when you're playing a team that's going to be substituting and stuff and isn't trying to go against you to where you can literally craft what you want, it makes you become a better player than you actually are.
Yeah, and I bet, to their point, I bet if you looked at it game-wise and you broke it down situationally, short yardage, red zones, two-minute drills, all different situations in game.
Splits.
I bet it was all based on matchup-wise. I bet he did exactly what you say. It's like, nah, this guy, these are my best run stuffers. These are my best pass rushers. This guy's great in the red zone because he blows it up. This guy's great in short yardage. And I bet if we went and looked at it film-wise, which I might do if I get bored enough, I bet they had some guys playing at, more reps in certain situations than others.
Yeah, and I'll definitely in the offseason chart out the snap counts just to see because you can a lot of the time find those rhythms within the coaching patterns.
Question.
And it's the same thing that say like really good baseball teams do, like the Astros do, where you have a superfluous amount of players, like four outfielders to play three positions. It's like, yeah, but this guy kills curveballs and we're facing righties today. Yep. And that's just it's a good way to have good coaches put your players in the best situation to be successful.
You don't need to know anything about Bo Davis other than anybody that's willing to go out and, on the practice field in August and wear a sweatshirt, not a dry fit long sleeve, wear a sweatshirt.
Yeah, man.
Then you're a different level of tough.
You are.
You're tough bordering on crazy.
Yeah, because you enjoy the uncomfortable.
Rod, you know those kind of type guys? You're around those guys in college and in the league, those guys that are, man, you're tough, but you're like an inch or two away from
crazy.
Going to some place where I don't even want to imagine right now.
I know those guys, trust me.
So what we've broken it down to, gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong as we get out of here, the keys to this Texas defense, it's easier to sort out the players at premium positions on offense and what they need to do, Worthy, Banks, and Ewers. But on defense, it's Terrence Brooks at that field corner. And then for the defensive line, Rod, to wrap up what you said, this is why my thing for that group has been I'm not concerned about Sweat and Murphy giving you what you got and maybe more from Coburn and Ojemo last year. I'm worried about can Collins and Broughton give you what Sweat and Murphy gave you last year.
Exactly. I'm not sure about that.
I don't know.
I think they'll be good players, but like I said, you're going to end up with, I wonder how many of these guys will end up in getting drafted into the NFL. You could end up, when it's all said and done, from that group last year having, five interior D linemen drafted from that group?
Yeah,
because
I think
Sweat and Byron Murphy going to get drafted.
There. Mm-hmm. I think Alfred will get drafted.
Alfred drafted his own potential. That's what I'm saying. You're going to get five. And then I'm wondering about, I think Vernon Broughton's a good player, but he's got – measurables too, but I don't know if he's got the film, so he may go undrafted free agent somewhere. But you're talking about NFL players, man, three deep.
Alfred Collins is one of those guys that we always see taken on day three where it's like, he wasn't that productive, but then you start looking at the measurables, you're like, he's worth taking a flyer.
You'll go to the league and end up signing a second contract with somebody.
there's so much about Alfred Collins, like as a player, that just reminds me about Henry Melton that I feel like, You'll want more. Then when it's contract time, that dude will ball out.
It's going to ball out.
Henry Melton's best year at Texas was his senior year when he's like, all right, it's time to show the scouts some. All right, let me put some good tape out there.
Damn right. Hey, you know what? Bo Davis will take it.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody will take it at this point. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod B., appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody, the Austin Radio Network and the Horn 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can get Rod B and Mike Harge each and every weekday on Ball Don't Lie from 3 to 7.
Shameless plug.
You can also get myself and Craig Way on Light the Tower. And thanks to Matt, get all of our archives, our classic interviews and shows are on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Search Horns 24/7 anywhere you get your podcast. That's Horns 24/7. No dashes, slashes, or spaces. Click that follow button. Get every episode of The Blitz when it drops. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. For the Horn family, from the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. And we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.